Now, today, we still have 2 weeks of our Bad Religion series. Today is week 7, but woe 6. So we did a bit of an intro the first week, and we've been looking at, took a break last week when Heiko spoke, and we've been looking at these 7 woes of Jesus, these 7 critiques that Jesus offers against the religious establishment. There are some things that are happening Jesus is not too happy about. He's pretty ticked off, we could say. And he just lets it rip. He lets everyone know exactly what he's thinking and how there are certain harmful ways of practicing religion. So he calls them out. He exposes them. We've been looking at these woes. Today we're looking at the 6th woe. But I don't want to just end with the deconstruction. So what does it look like to build back up again? If Jesus is tearing something down, well, then what's the positive? What's the way in which we can build that back up again? How do we connect with God in a way that brings life to our souls? So that's where we've been over the past couple of weeks. We're going to pick that back up again today. We'll be in Matthew chapter 23, verse 27. Look at that. Used to be a goalie, right? Still got it. I can do it. I'm not going to let Lois get those notes again. All right, Matthew 23, verse 27. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You are like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of dead men's bones and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness. Again, Jesus is not trying to make any new friends here. He's just calling it out, saying it how he sees it. And this one relates quite a bit to what we looked at 2 weeks ago, talking about the difference in the inside, the interior, and the exterior life, and how we all have an exterior life that is visible, that we can all see, and we all have an interior life that remains under the surface, hidden, unseen. So let's explore that a bit more by looking at whitewashed tombs. So what exactly is a whitewashed tomb? Let's start really basic here. What's a tomb? Anyone this morning? What's a tomb? Place for dead people. All right, Carl's on it. Tombs for 500 right there. Thinking of applying for Jeopardy. So a tomb is where you bury dead people. So within a tomb, there'd be a whole bunch of bones, especially as the body decomposes. All that's left within the area that the tomb is marking would be bones. Now, in the ancient world, tombs were marked, there'd be limestone graves, limestone headstones, and they'd be exposed to the elements. So think about if these limestone tombs, if they get a lot of dirt, rain, other forms of decay, moss maybe, whatever it might be, they would get a bit dirty over time, would they not? They would look distressed. They would look a bit weathered. So it would be difficult to distinguish what exactly was a tomb from what was just an ordinary rock, because they didn't necessarily have grave sites the way in which we had them, where they're all lined out perfectly, they're all marked off within a nice little fence or a stone wall. Sometimes they would just scatter the countryside. So if you'd be walking through the countryside, if you'd be frolicking through the hills, sometimes you would have no idea. Sometimes you'd have no idea if you were going to come upon a tombstone or if this was just an ordinary rock. Now, why did this matter? It mattered because of the book of Numbers, chapter 19, verse 16. Everyone's favorite book of the Bible says this: anyone out in the open who touches someone who has been killed with a sword or someone who has died a natural death, or anyone who touches a human bone or a grave will be unclean for 7 days. You're walking through the countryside and you happen to just be placing your hands on rocks. Maybe one of your kids, Asa's running around putting his hands on rocks. If you happen to touch a tomb, you have no idea it's a tomb, but if you happen to touch it, you would then be considered unclean. So what would happen is families, good friends, they would go to the known tombs of loved ones and they would whitewash the rocks. they would make them very, very clean on the outside in order to mark, this is a tomb, stay away from this area. Because the law at the time said, if you touch this tomb, you will be considered unclean. Very, very important, especially important if you're traveling to, say, Jerusalem for Passover, and you want to celebrate this holy time, but you happen to stumble upon a tomb, and now you can't actually enter the city, or you can't celebrate Passover, because now you're considered unclean. Also, some people even went further, and they said, if you step in the shadow of a tomb, you would be considered unclean. So whitewashing tombs be really, really important to make sure that you remain pure and clean and able to celebrate all the festivities or whatever celebration you're going to celebrate. So Jesus here, what he says, hey, you focus so much, again, on the exterior. You focus so much on whitewashing the outside, but you're forgetting about the inside that's filled with decay and dead bones, death, sin. There's so much attention paid to the outside, to the exterior, to what's visible, but you're neglecting what truly causes death and decay, all the things that are inside. I used to work at a car garage when I was in high school and college, and a couple times this happened. There'd be a customer who would come to the car garage and they would say, hey, I'm having trouble with my carburetor, right? Whatever part it might be. And they said, I took it over to this other garage around the corner and they said they fixed it, but the problem hasn't gone away. So we would bring the car into the shop, pop the hood, look at the part that was fixed, and the mechanics would say, you know what happened here is the other shop, they just spray painted your old part. I mean, there was one particular garage that was known for these spray paint jobs. And every time we had another car from this shop, we'd all say, yeah, we know exactly what's going on here. So again, on the outside, everything looked clean, right? If you're the customer and you're told this part was replaced and you looked at it, it looks brand new, it looks fresh, it looks clean. But the inner workings, they're still malfunctioning. The inner part wasn't actually fixed. The motor, whatever it was that was malfunctioning, it wasn't fixed. The outside looked good, but in reality, nothing really changed. What Jesus is saying when he's comparing Pharisees, religious teachers, to these whitewashed tombs, he's saying all the whitewashing that you do, it can't change what it is that is contained within. You can put forth the perfect image for people. And let's talk about social media for a minute. Let's pick on social media, right? Social media is a perfectly curated image of your life. I don't love social media. I do it sometimes. And I can't tell you how long sometimes it takes me to write up a post. You ever experienced this before? Maybe you're at your phone and you're getting arthritis in your thumbs from all the typing and then deleting that you're doing because you want everything to be perfect in what you put out. You want to make sure the picture is perfect too. I mean, there's people I know that, maybe you're one of these people. I'm not judging. It's okay. You get tagged. This is when Facebook was like a big thing. You would get tagged and you get that notification. You didn't like how you looked in it, so you would detag or untag, whatever it's called, yourself because you don't want that image of yourself getting out there. Social media, the way in which we portray ourselves to others, it's a perfectly curated image. And here's the other thing, okay? I'm going to say this. Maybe it's controversial. I don't know. I was thinking about it this week. There are some people who post the mess of their lives on social media. And again, maybe this is you. I'm not judging. Okay, here's the thing about that. Even posting the messiness of your life is curated. I'm just saying. Just saying. Just when you post how messy life is, you're also being very particular about the things that you're posting. Now, social media is great. I'm not knocking social media. All I'm saying is, how much energy and time and emotion do we spend comparing ourselves to images that we see of others online? Or to descriptions that others write about how life is going? I remember when I was in seminary, one professor, he had this image that he would always give us, and it was an iceberg. And on the surface, what you would see in the water is you would see a really, really small rock, or a chunk of ice. I guess that's what an iceberg is. But then underneath the surface was where the real iceberg was. Maybe you had like 5% of the iceberg on top of the surface above the water, but that was visible, but 95% of it was lurking down below. This is what happened with the Titanic, because you couldn't actually see the size of the iceberg until it was too late, until it was too close. When we think about our lives, the life that we all have, oftentimes the majority of our life is hidden. It's under the surface, like that iceberg. It's somewhere deep, deep within. It's all contained within. And we put so much energy to that 5%, the 10% that is visible, and we neglect the 90% or the larger majority of life that is right there under the surface. Any Twilight Zone fans? So I'm going to ruin a Twilight Zone episode for all of you. And I thought about this, and I don't like ruining movies, but here's the truth. You've had like 60 years to watch it, so if you haven't watched it yet, it's on you. One of my favorite episodes of all time is called Masks. Anyone ever see this one? All right. I got one Masks fan. Here's the premise of the episode. There's an elderly gentleman, quite wealthy, and he knows that he's at the end of his life. His doctors have said, hey, you got probably a couple days left, if anything. So is there anyone that you want to come down to visit you before you die? And he says, yeah, I want my family here. So he calls his entire family down, and it's, I forget if it's a son or daughter and their family. And they go through all the formalities. Oh, we're so sorry, grandfather. We're here. We love you. We care about you. He sees through all of it. He's not buying any of it. But they're saying all the right things. And then a little later into the dinner party, I think it's down in New Orleans where it's set during Mardi Gras, he says, because it's Mardi Gras right now, what I want you to do is I created a mask for all of you. And I want all of you to put this mask on. And you have to wear this mask until, I think it was midnight. And if you take the mask off before midnight, you will get none of my inheritance. He says, so you got to leave this mask on until the clock strikes. And when it does, then you can take the mask off. Now, each of his family members, they have one pretty big flaw each. And you can see it. Obviously, you know, the episode really gets into it and exaggerates it like it does. And it shows how this one person is all consumed with themselves. This person is greedy. This person is a big bully. But they try to put on an air like they're someone else. Like they have it all together. Like they're not that greedy person that they are, the vain person that they are. But the mask that he creates for each of them, it sees right through this exterior that they put on for others. The visible part that others can see. It sees right into the interior. It exposes all the death, the decay, those inner flaws that they have. They put the masks on. They say, these things are hideous. We're not going to wear them. Remember, you're not going to get any of my money. Of course they want the money. Wear the mask. Clock strikes midnight. The grandfather dies. They take their masks off. What do you think happened to their faces? They're contorted to the image of the mask permanently. Then you have Rod Serling at the end as he gives that classic little montage about what the whole episode is about. And he says something about how that which was within has now come to the surface for all to see forever, for the rest of their lives. I mean, I'll watch that one quite regularly because it always strikes. It's such a profound episode. If anyone needs any TV viewing this afternoon, Masks, Twilight Zone. But it's such a true image, right? So often we try to have that perfectly curated image that we want others to see about how life is going, about how things are going. But inside, our lives are telling a different story. And what this episode tells me is, yes, we can run, we can hide, we can push it all down, we can ignore and deflect. It takes a lot of energy, though. Or at some point, it's going to catch up to us, and it's going to all come crashing down on us. And the weight of all that death and decay that, let's be honest, we're all carrying our own stuff with us. It's life. It happens. We all have a suitcase of baggage that we carry with us. The more that we can sort through that suitcase, process it, deal with it, share it, confess it, get it out, the lighter that suitcase becomes. Oftentimes, life can feel really, really heavy because we're just pushing it all down and piling one layer of junk on top of the other layer. But the real life is found when we go right to the heart of all the sin and the death and decay that we have deep within us. And we're not simply caring about whitewashing the exterior, but we're caring about doing a power wash for our souls. So I want to give you this morning one way. Oh, here. So I want to say this, actually. One of the words, one of the insults, we could say maybe Jesus' insult of choice during these seven woes has been the word hypocrites. What is a hypocrite? It's a Greek word, and it means an actor, a stage player, someone who wears a mask, someone who is acting, pretending to be someone other than who they truly are. I mean, go through and count how many times Jesus uses this word hypocrites just in these couple of verses where the seven woes are contained. You hypocrite, you hypocrites, you're all wearing masks. So let's talk about one practice to bring life to your insides. And I learned this practice when I was in seminary. I think our professor called it an inventory of your life. And here's how it works. This is not for the weak of heart. I will just forewarn you. What you need to do is you need to carve out some space. A couple of hours, maybe an afternoon, probably minimum, I would say, at least an hour or two. A space where you can be silent, where no one's going to bother you. You can turn that phone off. Space just for you. And you sit there, or maybe you stand, maybe you go for a hike, grab a notebook, grab a pen, and then you ask the Spirit to bring to mind any sin, any death, darkness, or deceit that you've been carrying around within you. Now, Jesus talks about the Pharisees here. He says, you hypocrites, within is still hypocrisy and wickedness. So you ask God, God, I'm here. Is there any hypocrisy within me? Is there any way in which my life is divided, in which it's split, in which my exterior isn't matching up with my interior? Is there any excess weight, excess baggage that I've been carrying around with me and it's weighing me down? It's taking away the life of joy and fullness that you desire for me. Then in that notebook, you just start writing whatever comes to mind. You start recording it. Start jotting it down. This thought, something I did 15 years ago, this thing I've been carrying around with me, this something I did that just haunts me constantly. And then what you do is, as you record it down, you confess it. You own it. You bring it to light. See, as you bring the death and the decay to light, it's as if it loses its power over you. See, when it's in the shadows, when it's in the darkness, it still has this weight. It still has this power that it has over you. But as you expose it and bring it out and bring it into the light and confess it, it's like it removes the power that it once had. It takes away the death. Some of that weight, it becomes a little lighter. So I mentioned I did this while I was in seminary, and I actually did this with a friend. So you can, you know, feel free to grab someone and say, hey, I want to take an inventory of my life. Will you take it with me? And we took an entire morning. It was in the wintertime, so we had a good fire going. Put some worship music on for a bit to kind of set the scene. We had our notebooks, and we just sat there in silence and started just writing down. We actually took it into, we broke it down into chunks. We said, God, or Spirit, reveal anything ages 0 to 10. And I was like, oh, when I was 3, I don't remember that, but. We kind of broke it down into different chunks of your life. Sometimes we want to break it down into different phases. That was really helpful for us. And we would give a little bit of space, and then after a certain amount of time, we'd kind of look at each other and say, "You done? I think so. Are you done? I think so." And we would just confess whatever we had written down to each other. And I remember just walking away from that time, just feeling lighter. Like all the junk that was there was just working its way out, like power washing the insides. It still was there. It happened. You can't take any of that away, whatever it happens to be. But there's just something that happens when you're not carrying it stuck deep down within and you confess it and get it out. So as we come to the close of this Bad Religion series, we have one more week left, and next week's a little different. As we come to the close of this kind of mini two-parter about the interior life, don't neglect your insides. They're powerful. They have the potential to bring life or to bring death to your soul, to the life that you live. So I hope that maybe you'll spend some time this week and you'll just ask God to bring to mind if there's anything you've been carrying with you. If you want to find someone, great, awesome. It's always great to go through an exercise like this with someone that cares deeply about you, someone who loves you. I think that's also a powerful way that we live this life, is we find people who walk the journey with us. And as we do that, my prayer is that any division that exists between the interior and the exterior would just begin to melt away. And who you are, Jesus said, your left hand doesn't know what your right hand's doing. It's just because you naturally begin living a certain way. There's no energy that goes into, okay, do I have to do this? How am I this way? How am I here? There's no emotional drain, but you're simply just living an integrated life. You're the same person outside as who you are inside. Let me pray here for us. God, I thank you for these powerful statements of Jesus. God, these powerful statements that expose ways that take us away from the life that God desires for us. And God, I pray that as we listen, as we follow the words of Jesus, God, I pray that we would find the true life, the abundant life that Jesus offers. I thank you that in Jesus there is forgiveness. God, that there is restoration and peace. So we thank you for the forgiveness of Christ that is over us. And God, as we've talked this morning about some of the death and decay that we carry within us, it can be a heavy topic, God. So I just ask that your Spirit would grant us grace as we explore the inner life. God, as we explore what we've been carrying with us, I just ask for extra grace, an extra sense of your forgiveness and your peace over each one of us. And God, I pray that as we spend time listening to your Spirit, I pray that you would reveal to all of us if there's anything, any weight we've been carrying, any darkness we've been carrying. And I ask that you would grant us the power we need to bring it to the light so we may find healing, so we may find the life of joy, a life of wholeness that you want for each of us. We pray all this in the name of Jesus. Amen.